So my name is Tova Lavrov. I'm from the Boston area, third generation Bostonian on my grandfather's side. What? Brookline. Thank you very much. But you can chart the history of Boston's Jewish community by my family, because my grandfather grew up in Chelsea, my mother grew up in Dorchester, and I grew up in Brookline. And for people who know something about the Boston area, you will note that this is a very traditional migration pattern, and now everyone's moved out to spring. But my family... Right, exactly. Yes, are you from Boston?
No, I lived there
many years. Marilyn grew up in Brookline.
Right, okay, very good.
All the time I met you from Brookline.
Do you want to maybe join us? Just pull up here. Pull up the chair.
I'll move here.
I'm imagining everybody here has been to Israel.
You were there in June.
Right, and you guys follow what happens in Israel?
You can't miss it every day in the news. And I always say why.
Oh, that's a great question.
I always say why. I mean, it doesn't matter. In fact, some morning I said to my husband, "How many times do you think we're going to see the mention of Israel in the paper today? Are we going to go have a guessing game? It's Israel. It's always about Israel.
I think there are many reasons why Israel is in the heart of the news. Anybody want to guess some of them?
It's a very unique country.
Although they're
put themselves in the news.
Yes.
In many, many ways.
This is true. I think there are a number of reasons. First of all, it's the cradle of the three religions.
Right.
So everybody feels
a part of it.
They feel like they have an emotional connection, right? If you're Jewish, then obviously, you know, you feel that this is the land of the Bible. You know, this is where you're... Right, and return to Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. I'm always amazed by the Christians that come, and they feel very deeply this is the place where Jesus walked, right? The place where Jesus was born and then, you know, crucified. And if you're Muslim, this is where, you know, Muhammad came down on his... In fact, it's all in that same Temple Mount area. So I think it garners a lot of religious, spiritual, and there's messianic vision. Many, you know, religions have, you know, think that when the Messiah comes. And I think also because there's a number of miracles, modern day miracles, right? The fact that the Jews created the state of Israel, right? Resurrected the language after 2,000 years. And I think after that, I think there's also the fact that there's been so much violence. And I think particularly the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, which is one of the long-standing conflicts. And when you have a conflict that's been going on for that long, then everybody thinks they know everything about that conflict, right? We all know about it. And so you can almost latch onto it in any conversation, right? If you're talking about violence in Kyrgyzstan or in another country, people are like, where is Kyrgyzstan? Does anybody know where that is on the map? Right, so if 100,000 people are displaced in Kyrgyzstan, but you know, ten people are killed in Israel, everybody goes for the 10, right?
I think that Israel is put at a higher level too.
What?
Israel is put at a higher level. People judge Israel harsher than any other society because they think that for some reason, whether because it's religiously directed, but it's like the expectation is that this is Israel and they should behave differently. They're not looking at us people, and I think I personally think they're always judged far more harsh than other society. I personally think that.
I think that's true. I do think that's true. But if I were just to go back to the conflict for a second, I think there has been this impression that has been generated that the cause of unrest, or one of the causes of unrest in the Middle East, has got to be the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, right? Anybody listen to Obama's speech? I'm trying to think he made the speech. I'm trying to remember where he made it. It was, anyway, he made this policy speech, right? And he was at the UN. Thank you.
Within New York.
Within New York at the
UN. I was in New York at the time. I was in the
time. Israel was mentioned.
Well, even more. He goes for a very, he talks for a very long time about Syria. Right? He's like, he's got almost like, and you think that's right. And you think about all the violence in Syria. Of course he's talking about Syria. Then he talks for slightly less time about Iran. Well, Iran. And an even less amount of time about Israel. And then he says, but his two policy agendas are Iran, and you think it's going to be Syria, and it's not. It's Israel, because they are the source of unrest in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. I think there are people that believe that if they solve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, they're going to solve peace in the Middle East. And in spite of the unrest,
Do you see like how twisted that is to think, like, it feels like everybody, whatever problem there is going on in the Middle East is like you can always put it on Israel, like what's going on in Algeria. What's going on in Tunisia, what's going on in Libya, it all can come back to Israel. But do you see like how twisted that is? That is, there's something seriously wrong with shoveling it on a country that's only seven, like, there's, it's very troubling.
I think we've all experienced that, and I think that's part of the issue, is that at the same time we're trying to solve our own internal issues, right? I mean, there's all kinds of internal Israeli issues that divide the society. There's the religious issue, there's the issue of the migrants, and there's the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. While we're trying to sort of make our way as a fledgling country dealing with so many complex issues, right, and we exist in a sea of countries with many more complex issues, you know, in Saudi Arabia, women can't drive, right? I mean the level of, you know, when you think of the amount of people that have been killed in Syria, and you think of all the attention that gets focused on our conflict, it seems a little unfair. I agree, but you know, here this.
I think North Americans can relate more closely with Israelis because they've got, to a great extent, they're very similar, and they're more moderate, they're a little more civilized than people in some of the other countries. They're more democratic, they're more established, so you know, they can relate to Israel as being more something like one of the states of the United States or Canada, as opposed to being this thing that you can't understand to the other countries in the Middle East.
Well, I think that gets back to your question, really, right? Mm-hmm. Hello? Yeah, hi Laura, how are you? No. Neither. 1,736. 387 and 311 for East Jerusalem, right? Do you see those two numbers? Okay, now only two, right, because remember you said you weren't going to include the returns. There are two projects that are being remarketed for the second time. You said we're not including those, right? So you only want those first two numbers. Now move over to the West Bank settlement list, right? It should be 1,030. So if you have 1,030 and the six, how much did I say? It should be 696, 387, 311. No, wait, 698 and 1,030 is what? Really? Okay. Yeah. Then that's the number. It's that 1,030. That's what it says on what I sent you in Hebrew, right? 1,030 and the 387 and the 311. You see those two projects? Am I right with the 387, or is that slightly off? And then the 3 and the 311 also correct, right? So that's 398 plus 1,030. that combination and the list of the West Bank settlements, the construction, they should add up to 1,030. And if they don't, we've made a mistake somewhere. Gebbebin, you mean? Yes. Yes? For Ariel. And there's an 80, and there's an 80 there somewhere. Where's the 80? Okay, so what are you still missing? Okay, I would check the Hebrew list and I would check the English list. Do you have the Hebrew list that I sent you? Okay, when you go through that list, what it comes to 1,032. The list of Western construction. It's Israel Today now. That they're going to do building as a part of the, you know, Ed, right, and Kerry is coming on Tuesday, and the housing ministry today announced that they was going to build 1,700, and now you're seeing us going over how many units exactly that's going to be. They did, that's right, they did announce it last week, but they announced it generally in principle. What they didn't do the exact list. And now that Kerry is arriving on Tuesday, what they announced today was the exact list, which was about 696 units in East Jerusalem in two neighborhoods, and then a list of 1,032 in West Bank settlements within the Bronx. Right. But I think what I was trying, Laura, are you still there? But did you come to the end? I would say that as long as you're moving off of the list in Hebrew, go with that. Maybe they made a typo. Our list should match the Hebrew list that I sent you. Okay? No, leave it at 1,032. In other words, you should be working, your numbers should be going off the Hebrew numbers that I gave you, not what Herb put. Right? What Herb wrote should match the Hebrew numbers, and it's Yes. I understand that, but maybe they made a mistake somewhere. So let's go to 1,032, as long as all the other numbers match. Yeah. Okay? Thanks. Bye. Okay, bye.
Interesting.
Sorry. Okay. Never say that newspapers don't care.
So
basically, right. So I'm gonna just wrap you guys up, and then I'm gonna move on to where I want to go. But I think what you were saying about people considering us a Western country is one of the reasons why people get so upset at Israel. One of the reasons why it's kind of like, you know, sort of the virgin and the whore complex, mm-hmm. right? You're too high, and then because you're so high, you're so low. Right, I think because they consider us a Western country, they think it's absurd to compare us to Egypt. They're comparing us to the West. And when they compare us to the West, they go, guys, you want to be a Western country, but, you know, let us tell you, you know, there's a little bit of a differential. And we're going, look at where we live. Are you kidding us? Right? So it's a very delicate dance that Israel does. But I'm just going to sort of focus on what I cover a lot of, which is West Bank settlement and the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. When I came to Israel in 2000, I had grown up in a religious house, done Sunday school, been to Israel, considered myself to be, you know, fairly educated Jewish person, particularly on Israel, right? Very kind, but all the things that I knew, and the only thing that's happened since arriving in Israel is I learned how much I don't know. it's really true. It's amazing to me. What's really amazing to me is the assumptions that I made. And some of the assumptions has to do with when I grew up and the changes that have happened since then. And I think part of what happens when we talk about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and that's what I'm saying, it's one of the oldest conflicts, right? So people think they know it. Well, what happens when you know something? Your brain just kind of shuts down, right? Mm-hmm. I know it, so I don't need to know it anymore, right? And then you miss the changes, right? Because you know it. How can it be changing, right? And I think that's a lot of what happened to me. So I, you know, I grew up and I really learned about Israel pre-Oslo, if you will, okay? Right? And so we all know the basic thing. Mm-hmm. You know, Israel's a very small country. It gets attacked in 1967. It, you know, wins a massive amount of territory, the Golan Heights, East Jerusalem, the West Bank. And in my kind of naive kind of way, I was like, wow, now all of this is part of Israel, right? And the debate is, should we give it back, right? That's the debate. Not give it back, because the Palestinians, it was Jordan that had it, but should we give it to the Palestinians, right? So that's the debate. Should we now give it away, now that we have it, right? And we have it. And I came to Israel, and the first thing, of course, one of the first things I discovered was that, in fact, although physically we control it, except for the Golan and East Jerusalem, we never annexed the West Bank. We never annexed the West Bank. And what that means, never would have occurred to me, is that the West Bank is under military control, right? It's not actually under full Israeli law, right? What that means is full Israeli law doesn't apply to the West Bank. I had no idea. It would never have occurred to me. Right? Two different...
But why is that?
Why is that? Well, why we didn't annex it is a complex... is really a complex question that would be so hard to answer. I think, and within that is one of the seeds, not all of the seeds, but one of the seeds of how we get to now, okay? First of all, the international community, of course, has never recognized that we've annexed the Golan Heights and East Jerusalem, but we did, and they didn't like it. So you could argue that we didn't want to risk angering, right, the international community. That's an argument, okay? But we did it for the Golan Heights and East Jerusalem, so it's there, okay? You could argue that we didn't annex it because we always assumed we would give it away. It's another argument, that it really is a playing card. And one of the ways you know it's a playing card is we never made the situation permanent. We're not giving back the Golan, we're not giving back Jerusalem, we've annexed them, that comes to the West Bank. It's very nice that everyone's talking about how it's ours, right? But in reality, you know, it's
Why do we settle so much?
Well, I'm getting there. Great question. Want you to hold it? Okay, if I don't.
I have back trouble, so I'm going to have to stand for a while.
I absolutely don't mind.
Okay.
Please feel free, as long as, you know, you're listening. That's good. That's one thing. And I think one of the critical reasons why we didn't get to the second kind of odd assumption that I had, or kind of a fine point that I missed, because you always take the situation that you know and you apply it to something else, right? So I'm not Canadian. I apologize. I don't know how Canada works. I'm going to use America as my model. You know, I'm American. I'm from Boston. Last I checked, was actually in the United States. I assumed that Israel was a democracy like America was a democracy, which means a state for all of its citizens, right? But in fact, it's not. It's an ethnic nationalist democracy, which is actually very different. It operates a lot like a democracy, right? It's just a different form of a democracy. And what that means is that when we talk about, you'll hear Israeli leaders say it all the time, right? I'm going to be a Jewish state and a democratic state. What is all this thing with the Jewish state? If anybody was at the lunch thing, they sort of brought it up, but then kind of attached it to this whole other thing. What is it with this Jewish thing that they keep saying? Don't we know it's a Jewish state? Why do we keep having to bring it back into the conversation? It's in every line. Listen to all the speeches. Netanyahu, with me. It's when you think a Jewish and democratic, Jewish and, what is this thing? Okay, so Israel. And in general, you want to look at also the Palestinians and kind of like what you're talking about when we talk about a two-state solution. What the Palestinians are talking about, the Israelis are talking about, they're talking about ethnic national solutions. They're not talking about states for all of its citizens, like I would recognize an American-style democracy. And for that, you need a majority number of Jews. That's the whole issue. To be a democracy and an ethnic nationalist country, yet the majority has to be that ethnic nationality, or you're going to have a hard time being a democracy, right?
South Africa used to be.
Yes. There's a certain, I don't know a lot about South Africa, but I think that there might be some similarities there. So, okay, now you want to get back to, wait, who asked the question why we didn't? That was you, right? Sorry, what's your name?
Faye.
Hi, Faye. So Faye, your question was great. Well, one very reasonable theory why we didn't is that, let's say we had extended Israeli law, okay, to and annexed the West Bank. All the Palestinians living there, what would have been the next thing we'd have had to do?
Citizenship.
Give them citizenship, right. Now, wait a sec, there's a lot of Palestinians, right? There's, you know, the balance of Jews and Palestinians, if you include everybody in the West Bank, and it was assuredly Gaza, include Gaza, comes very close. So wait, now are we a dual national state? Do we become a state for all the citizens? Or can we still be a democracy if we don't offer full citizenship and full rights to half of our people? It's a very complex equation. So yes, go ahead.
Well, and isn't there, because I just finished reading this book called A Case for Israel by Alan Dershowitz. And
excellent, yeah. Yes.
Well, there's a lot of discussion about pre-World War II, and there's constantly an issue, not with, it doesn't matter how big Israel is, or like, it is a fundamental,
up.
I'm sorry, there's a fundamental issue with the fact that it's under Jewish control. There's constantly, regardless of how big Israel is, there's constantly going to be an issue of the fact that there are Jews in this area.
No, I think that's not what I mean. I think I understand the point he's making. I think what I'm trying to say is you're talking now just about a very basic functional level, right, of how you operate as a society, okay? And when you have a society that's going to be a democracy, okay, and you want to be a democracy, and I think that's important, right, from a Jewish perspective and certainly from a Western perspective, it's important to us as Americans, I'm sure important to you as Canadians, this whole issue of being, I don't think we could imagine Israel not as a democracy. If you're going to be a democracy, then there's certain fundamental elements of what a democracy is about that you can't avoid and still be considered a democracy. So it becomes the question of, so the one way to avoid so many interesting problems, right, is actually not to annex it. But then you get a different problem. Well, it actually is the choice that they made. They didn't annex it. It's an absolute, you know, that becomes a reality. Okay, is they simply left it as it was under military control. So you want to look from 67, you want to divide the period from 67 until now into two periods, okay? From 67 until 1993, which is Oslo, okay? And somehow, when, you know, we all watched the famous handshake on the White House lawn, right? Yeah, okay, it was very exciting. Whether you agree with it or not, the hope of peace was very exciting. Okay, really, it was. You know, maybe we're entering a new era, a dawn of a new thing. And you think of Oslo as a peace process, right? They talked, there was a whole, supposed to be this whole process of conversation, 7 years, then it was Camp David, then it all fell apart, it didn't work. I'm guessing you weren't surprised it fell apart just by your reaction. Fine. Okay, Oslo came, Oslo went, not so. From 67 to 93, that's pre-Oslo. From 67 to 93, Israel is in full military control of the West Bank. The West Bank, as an overall area, is indistinguishable. The Palestinians have no autonomy. We are controlling everything about their civilian lives, mm-hmm. which, by the way, was an absolute nightmare for Israel.